Welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast, where business leaders come to share their advice and journeys to success with existing and emerging leaders of America. Join us as we delve into the minds of these accomplished individuals, uncovering the strategies and insights that have propelled them to the top. Whether you're an established leader or an emerging force in the business world, this podcast is your go-to source for the knowledge and inspiration needed to navigate the dynamic landscape of American business. Now, here's your host, Dylan Bloyd.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Business Leaders of America podcast. Today, we're thrilled to host Bennett Maxwell, the founder and chairman of Dirty Dough, a rapidly growing cookie franchise. Bennett's journey is a testament to resilience and innovation, navigating challenges like the Cookie Wars lawsuit to propel Dirty Dough to over 60 locations nationally. Beyond business, Bennett prioritizes mental wellness, sharing insights on his podcast, Deeper Than Dough. Join us as we uncover the secrets to Bennett's success, explore his unique approach to entrepreneurship, and discover his vision for the future. Welcome to the show, Bennett.
Thank you, Dylan. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you on. All right, if you could please give us a brief intro on yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, based out of Salt Lake City, married, three crazy kids, 7, 5, and 3, which definitely keep me busy outside of the business.
Right.
Background in sales, did a lot of door-to-door selling pest control, lawn aeration, satellite, Vivint smart home security, which led me to solar. And then I started a solar company doing sales and marketing, some door-to-door, some online. And then Dirty Dough was a company founded in 2018 by a buddy of mine who moved to Arizona. He posted on Facebook saying, I'm selling cookies out of my apartment. I want an investor to open up the first storefront. So I invested, first storefront opened in March of 2020. COVID, like two days before the grand opening was the government shutdown. So talk about timing.
Man.
At the end of that year, I was in San Diego and I said, hey, let's franchise this. I'll be your first franchisee. Rather than franchising, he said, I want to get out of it. So I purchased it from him. And other than the name, in 2021, we redid every recipe, the entire model, how we produce the cookies. We went to stuffed cookies. We attached my mission to it, I guess, encompassing mental health. Mm-hmm. And then we started franchising and I'm still figuring out everything. But yeah, in the first store opened in June of 2022, February of 23, we had 7 stores. And then Here we are 13 months later and we have, over 60 stores, another 40 some odd in construction. We do mobile franchising. So if you think like food trucks or food trailers, we have over a dozen of those.
Wow.
We're operating out of 20 states right now. And yeah, just it's been a freaking wild ride trying to open up a store every freaking week. But we're doing it. We're figuring it out. And it seems like it's working.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. Are the trucks that you guys use together with the restaurants? So if they have a restaurant, then they kind of go out, or are they separate?
It can be either or. I would say pretty much all of them are attached to a restaurant.
Okay.
But I think there's 2 out there that they didn't opt in for, an actual storefront. They're just doing the mobile franchise. But going forward, we really do feel like it's a better strategy to attach it to a storefront. It works really good for marketing if you're showing up to all these events with a trailer that's, wrapped in all these cool cookies and mm-hmm. the smell. And then where does all the repeat business go after you're done with the football game? Well, goes to the brick and mortar. So seems to work really well hand in hand.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I was just wondering if that was kind of included in the 60 total restaurants.
So yeah, 60. And then in addition to that, we have 13 food trucks. So
gotcha.
Yeah, okay. We have about 75 franchises in operation or stores because some of those are corporate.
That's incredible. In 13 months, that's unheard of, man. That is really, really cool. What would you say some of the key factors that contribute to its rapid growth?
I think there's a lot of luck involved.
Okay.
and it's funny because, I mean, a lot of it is timing. Right at the very beginning, you mentioned that kind of in the intro, we got hit with a lawsuit by, the number one competitor, which they're at 1,000 locations, but when they sued us, they were still at like 400, 500 locations. They're a $1 billion company.
Right.
And the response that we had to the lawsuit was once the news picked it up, then I came out and kind of gave my side of the story. So I was very public about, and I broke down every single point of the lawsuit. We did like professional videos making fun of it, like lighthearted, right? We did billboards that got picked up by Good Morning America and CNBC. And a lot of other, large news stations, which gave us so much eyes on us, mm-hmm. and then because we have such a simplistic food franchise model, a lot of those converted and we've sold, you know, north of 450 franchises. So a lot of it was the public exposure from our reaction to the lawsuit. Okay. I think why people are buying franchises are two reasons. One, we have a very simplistic model. I ship you a frozen pre-portioned cookie dough ball. All cookies are same, you cook at the same time, temperature and fan speed, and our ovens are all programmed. So you can walk in any store, grab a bunch of cookies, put it on a cookie sheet, put it in the oven, press start. So people are attracted to the simplicity. You know, you can operate up 600 square feet with one employee. And then also the team. I hired a CEO that's been doing this for 40 years. Wow. We just transitioned her to president and we hired a new CEO who's the former CEO of Jimmy John's. So a lot of it is surrounding, you know, the company with good advisors and employees that have opened up, I mean, legitimately thousands of restaurants. Mm-hmm. So I think that's it gives some comfort. We're a new and emerging brand, but we have the experience of lots of other more established brands.
Right. Would you say that's what differentiates you guys from your competitors, the operation and the simplicity of it?
Yeah. From what I've seen in the gourmet cookie category, everybody out there is, here's a recipe. You go order your own ingredients. You buy your own mixers. You hire your own employees. And legitimately, they're doing everything by hand. Mm-hmm. You make 60 cookies and then you grab the dough by hand. You put it on a scale till it weighs just right. Then, you right. form it. And it's just very labor intensive. So I do feel like that's, you know, people want simplicity and they want scalability. So if our stores have 15 employees and the competitors have 50, mm-hmm. then it's like, well, you could open up three of ours and manage roughly the same amount of people, which I think is attractive.
Yeah, absolutely. And attractive to franchisees and everything. So that is, that's incredible, man. So you spoke about the Cookie Wars lawsuit. For any of the listeners who don't know, that lawsuit was against Dirty Dough and Crave Cookie Co., correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So like you said, it made big headlines and posed significant challenges for Dirty Dough. How did you navigate through these adversities other than, you know, kind of making it how you responded and things, but how did you ultimately get through it? And what lessons did you learn from overcoming these big obstacles?
Yeah. I mean, the big thing was, I guess a lot of people would shy away from being public about a problem, mm-hmm. which, and maybe I did too, right? Because by the time we were sued till the time I said anything about it, 6 weeks had lapsed and it was a news station that picked it up. So I was like, crap, right. Well, if they're covering it, I'm going to give my side of the story. And I'm just, my philosophy is definitely be as transparent as possible. Mm-hmm. As well as, you know, you have to expect that it's going to be hard. Right. Everybody knows it's going to be hard. So when it is hard, how do you react? And I think the best reaction is, you know, authenticity, being very upfront, but also incorporating humor. That's just kind of my personality. Like some of the billboards that we threw up were, you know, cookies so good, we're being sued. You can't hurt our feelings like that. You know, our cookies don't crumble with the competition. Awesome. Things like that. And I think that attracts a lot of people, kind of the boldness. As far as just getting through it, mm-hmm. was, you know, there's just a lot of time with your legal counsel and then also bouncing ideas off of advisors, which was something that's really helped me out. Right when I bought the company, within a few months, I formed an advisory board with some really good people that have way more business experience than I do. So yeah, a year and a half after the lawsuit, it was all settled and dismissed. And here we are.
Right. Well, that's great news. I'm glad it's all over with and don't have to worry about that anymore. And, you know, now that those obstacles are behind you, what challenges and opportunities do you foresee in scaling Dirty Dough even further than the 60 locations? And how do you plan to navigate them in the future?
I mean, the market has changed drastically in the last 2 years, especially in the cookie space, because there's so many different companies. Kind of going back to the model, how easy is it to start a cookie company out of your kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. If it goes well, then open up a storefront. If it goes well, then you franchise it. And then as franchisees come in, you know, again, you just kind of give them the recipes, provide them with a playbook, where it's such a low barrier of entry. It's exploded with a lot of different competitors, where ours is much different that we had to invest. I mean, we were into this by the time I bought the company till we opened our first storefront, we'd spent $2 million in getting the facility and, you know, processes, everything in place. So I think navigating that, you know, the challenges with the market becoming more saturated, I definitely think we're set up really well because we have lower cost of goods as far as, you know, our purchasing power to buy flour and truckloads of flour at a time versus a 50 pound bag of flour to each location. What we're focusing on right now is opening up all the stores that we've already sold, right? Opening up a store a week and providing training and direction in how to open the store effectively, make sure marketing's correct, and then us sending out support, them coming in and flying in for training is definitely a large undertaking. And we're also focusing on expanding our product offering. Everything is, you know, cookie and themed and cookie inspired, but adding things like edible cookie dough, ice cream sandwiches, and some drink options as well. Different types of coffee is the big focus right now.
Gotcha. Are you distributing out of one location out to all the stores? Yes.
Yep. Okay.
How soon do you think you'll have to expand that? If I guess it just depends on how many stores continue to grow in the coming future, but how soon do you think you'd have to expand the distribution?
Where we're at right now, we're at about 15% capacity is all, because we've already sold to franchisees. You know, we know that the volume is coming. So we're good for another 2 years. Big picture though, we will probably have two facilities throughout the nation that we'll distribute from. But right now, the one that we have is set up to really support our growth for the next 2 years.
Wow. Oh, that is awesome. Is that located in Utah as well?
Yes, it is.
Oh, that's great. Wow, man. Well, thank you for that. I do appreciate it. I did want to shift gears a little bit. You mentioned that you integrate personal videos of your family into your social media and presence to showcase your core values. I was watching some videos and previous podcasts that you've been on. So how do you balance sharing personal moments while maintaining a professional image on social media? And why is it important to do so?
Yeah, about 2 years ago, I was part of a mastermind group, and they said, you have to build your personal brand. Before that, I would post a few times a year, you know, maybe my kids' birthdays. and something that I've heard more recently from Alex Hormozi is like, what makes your personal brand is you. Like for him, he does have a franchise background, but he also has a fitness background. And then he talks about things that he likes. So I do think that professionalism is important, but at the same time, I think what people relate to is just being real and open. Like, what is important in my life? My family. And I spend time with them every single day. And every morning, my kids, can we go on a daddy-daughter day? And it's like, of course we can, but go to school, I'm going to work, and then we'll go do something.
Yeah.
So incorporating things outside of, you know, I don't think anybody wants to hear just constantly being pitched on something. So if you look at my social media, it's not about dirty dough so much. It's more about mental health, work-life balance, putting your family first, and then also fitness, which is something I've really been going down a personal fitness journey. I've lost just over 100 pounds.
Whoa.
And I am trying everything under the sun to see how I can improve my health. So I do a decent amount of posts along that. And just building that personal brand has been actually the number one lead source for our franchises. People following my social media, not the company social media, because the company posts about cookies and is advertising to get customers to buy cookies, but not getting people to buy franchises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, first off, congratulations on the weight loss. That is incredible, man. Keep it up. Keep up the great work. But I think that's important. And I love that. I have 5 children of my own. 8 is the oldest, you know, and younger. So incorporating them into your daily life is so important, especially as being an entrepreneur. So I do appreciate you sharing that message. And for any of the listeners, you know, who think that it always has to be professional when you're starting your business or when you're branding, regardless of what your business is, I think that it's important to show your personal side as well. And so I do appreciate that.
Yeah.
Beyond Dirty Dough and beyond that, what legacy do you hope to leave behind both personally and professionally?
When I had purchased the company, I was still running my solar company and I was doing both of them at the same time. So I kind of mentioned I got up to 310 pounds.
Yeah.
And I'm 5'8". You know, it's not a healthy weight, probably at any height, but especially not 5'8". and I just told myself what my family wanted is for me to work all the time so we can have more money. Because to me, you know, more money equals more free time, and more free time is more vacation time. And who am I with on vacation? I'm with my family. And how do I feel when I'm with my family? I feel happy. So, you know, I just got on this cycle that like, I'm going to push health and relationships aside because one day it'll be better.
Mm-hmm.
When I sold the solar company, I achieved a financial goal that I was shooting for. And so this was just under 3 years ago. Okay. And I wanted $1 million net worth. And man, it felt great for a little bit, right? And then you just get back to your normal baseline levels of happiness. So in that time, like I'm like, okay, within a week of me getting this big dopamine hit from having an exit and having some cash and having some properties, whatever, I went back to my normal kind of baseline levels of happiness and I immediately set the next goal. And again, I'm going to sacrifice everything till I get it.
Right.
And I recognize that pattern. So I started seeking help. I read a book about purpose, life purpose, and mission statement. I asked 20 right. different close friends and family, what are my core values? I wrote my own obituary. I started seeing a therapist. And I really wanted to narrow down that exact question, like, what am I about? And I narrowed down to joy and fulfillment. Like, I want as much joy and fulfillment as I can in this life. And then I threw in despite life's dirtiness. One, because it ties in with dirty dough. But two, it speaks to my personal journey of don't wait to sell your solar company in order to have more joy and fulfillment. Gotcha. So the legacy that I would love to leave behind is being able to experience the most joy and fulfillment for me and my family, but also to spread that and help as many people as possible. So how do you do that? For me, I've narrowed it down to mental health or mindset, and then also entrepreneurship. That's just something that's been very empowering to me. So how can I lower the barrier of entry to entrepreneurship for other people to be able to experience what I've experienced? So that's what I'd love to leave behind, is just more joy and fulfillment in this world.
Oh, that's great. With joy and fulfillment, what does your day-to-day look? So how does it look now, being just focusing on Dirty Dough, being the chairman of Dirty Dough? What does your day-to-day look like then?
On the work stand front, I do a lot of this, you know, podcasting on my own podcast, guest on other podcasts, news mm-hmm. interviews, things like that. More on the business side is capital raising. I feel like we're always raising money.
Right.
So we've done about $5 million in the past, and we're in a raise right now, which is hopefully is our last raise. So I spend a lot of time investor relationships, both current and future investors. Outside of work, I try my best to like have a hard cutoff. 5 o'clock, I don't care what the problem is. It can wait till tomorrow. And I'm just gonna be with my family. And that's I have to set that rule, or else if I don't, I'm gonna fall back into a what I was doing. So nights and weekends are now, I'm not gonna work. I have to spend time on myself, on my own mental health, on my own joy and fulfillment. And then I do think that makes me a better leader and a better mindset, able to make better decisions why I am working the traditional 9-to-5.
Right. No, that's great. I think that's very important, because if you don't set those rules, like you said, you're just going to go right back into that same situation, overwork, and then put yourself right in that same situation. So that is a great rule. So for any of the listeners that are listening and are looking to potentially open a franchise of any sort for Dirty Dough, what's an ideal franchisee look like for you guys for future expansion? What's ideal for you? So if any listeners are looking to expand, what do you guys look for?
Yeah, so our new CEO, this is, and I love how he says it. And again, he was the CEO of Jimmy John's. He's opened up maybe 2,000 restaurants between a dozen different brands. Yeah. And he says, you buy one restaurant, especially if it's a snack brand like we are, and you have a job. Mm-hmm. But if you expand and you buy more, then you can actually start creating passive income. So we love multi-unit owners that will, you know, lock down a city and develop 2 or 3 or 5 locations across 5 years, whatever. And they're really owning that market, getting involved in their community. If they have experience with food or franchising in the past, obviously that's a plus, just mm-hmm. because they get the system. But really what we're looking for is people who want to be involved in the local community. We do have a nonprofit that we want to open up, a mental health wellness center in a K-12 school, you know, nearby every store. So, and we just see when you give back and you're involved in the local community, fundraising for schools like that, it's a win-win for everybody. You know, the mm-hmm. franchisee gets more exposure. Us as Dirty Dough Corporate, we get more exposure. The franchisee is getting higher revenues, and you're giving back to the community, and then the community supporting you in return. So those are the best franchisees. Even, you know, somebody could have 1 million years in experience, but somebody else maybe has never done this, but they know how to do that guerrilla marketing, boots on the ground, and they're just go-getters.
Yeah.
That's what makes the difference between an unsuccessful versus an average versus a very successful franchisee.
Gotcha. What's your goal? What is Dirty Dough's goal for amount of franchisees in the next coming years? Do you have a goal on how many you guys are reaching for?
Yeah, and it's a nice round number because that's what we do, right? 1,000. So I would
Awesome.
love to do 1,000 open brick and mortar locations in conjunction with 1,000 wellness centers.
Wow.
If we hit that, I mean, man, that would be so cool to be able to serve so many different communities and, provide food and a dessert product to, I mean, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people a day, while also educating the youth on what emotions are and how to regulate those, which is, what we're trying to do in the mental health wellness centers.
Right. Yeah, what a milestone to hit. Well, I'm excited to follow you and Dirty Dough and see how the success continues to grow, and can't wait to see you guys hit that 1,000. That's going to be awesome, man. So, how can listeners engage with you, learn more about Dirty Dough, and listen to your podcast, Deeper Than Dough?
Yeah, Deeper Than Dough, it's really speaks to kind of what I was just talking about, right? That personal journey. Deeper Than Dough is more than money. And I'm very much shifting my focus on, I have the logic mindset and I love math and I love spreadsheets and all that, and emotions weren't ever a thing.
Yeah.
Now diving into it, I'm like, wait, that's all we are as emotional creatures. Like, I want more money because why do I want more money though? And we kind of stop at that point. But if you keep asking, well, I want money to buy a bigger house or to buy my mom a house. Well, why do you want to buy your mom a house? Because you feel like she needs a better house and you owe it to her so she will love you more, or well, whatever it is. But it really will come down to emotion. It's like, well, can you just solve that emotional need without going through your entire life, going through these arbitrary goals that may or may not get you to the feeling that you want? So that's the Deeper Than Dough podcast, which we're on all different platforms. Me personally, I have a website that links to all my social medias because I do post typically twice a day, kind of mentioning everything under the sun there
Right.
on those different posts. But bennettmaxwell.com and then dirtydough.com for the company website, as well as any social medias.
Perfect. I'll make sure those are all in the show notes, make it easier on the listeners as well. But to your point about the, figuring out your why, it's almost like a five why for your emotional happiness, right? Just going until you find that core happiness or core why, right?
Yep. And I think that's where we get the why of I want to retire my mom or give money to the poor, but we don't say, but why do you want that? Because it is an emotion. It's always an emotion that we're after. So you need to nail down, I want to feel more security, more peace, more love, more worthiness, whatever that is. And then you can aim towards that and use your company to get there or whatever, rather than I just, I think we need to ask ourselves why three more times, and then that'll give us a lot of clarity in life.
Right. Oh, I appreciate that. That is a very good answer, and I think people do need to take that into consideration, because I think, at least from my experience, I see people use that in the business standpoint of, getting to the core reason why you had a mistake in at work or something, and using that five why. So from an emotional standpoint, I love that. People do need to use that more. All right, well, Bennett, I do appreciate you spending time with us. This has been great. I know you're a busy man, so I do appreciate you spending time with us. But I do have one more question for you before we go. So, building a strong brand is essential for obviously any business's success. What advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are looking to establish and grow their brand in today's competitive market?
The number one thing that helped me is surrounding myself with really good people. So I briefly mentioned that I didn't know. I took a startup course right after I had my first, I sold my first company, and I'm like, I kind of thought I was too good for it. I'm like, I just had
Gotcha.
a good exit.
Yeah.
I couldn't have been more wrong. I didn't know anything. So I took up this startup course and I learned that you can have a board of advisors, which is different than a board of directors in a C corporation, right? Board of advisors, you give them a 0.25% equity or percent equity. And you can get these high-level people that can really drive success. So I got one of our first advisors, our first advisor, his first company was a $30 billion company when it went public. And our second advisor owns the largest property management franchise in the nation, in the world for that matter, right? So
Wow.
getting those people on, to answer your question, I'm not answering your question. It's go find people that are smarter than me. Get them to buy into your vision, and you don't have to pay them large amounts of money. You don't have to pay them anything. Just set up a board of advisors. Google how to do that. You set it up over a vesting period, and you can get these top tier people to give you advice and teach you what they did to build their brands. Again, starting right from the get-go, you don't have to have a ton of money to pay any of them. So get the right people on the bus.